And yes, on the line, we have got Blair Pelosi, the CEO of 350.org. And yeah, we're keen to hear from you, Blair, about this new Stop Adani Alliance. Welcome.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right. So what's happening? Who is in this new Stop Adani Alliance? What are the different groups and people involved?
Well, it was launched this week by one of my favorite people, Bob Brown, who says it's, you know, the new Franklin fight. So it's nice to hear that somebody who has that much experience in battles like the Franklin is behind it and with us, as well as it's all 13 organizations altogether, including ourselves, 350, ACF, the AYCC, Market Forces, you know, a whole range, some local and more grassroots organizations, and a lot of the national organizations here in Australia.
Yeah, right. And is that always going to be 13 organizations, or is this alliance something that's looking to, I guess, bring other organizations into the fold and expand that alliance?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I think we'd really love to expand it, particularly beyond, you know, just environmental and climate groups. The Adani fight and the reasons for stopping it are so widespread. You know, if nothing else, I think it's a real turning point in Australia where we have to make a choice about, do we stick with 1940s and 50s mining and digging things out of the ground that we know right now are polluting not only here in Australia, but where that coal would be burned in India. But also, you know, we have a choice now to make about what our future will be like. Will it be clean energy? Will we go to the low-carbon economy? So I think unions will be important, as well as certainly youth and student groups, because it's their future we're playing with. And we'd love to see different kinds of groups of people from all over the country take part if they're interested. One thing to mention, too, is the fight about the money, whether we should be using taxpayer money in a fund called the NAIF Fund, which is an infrastructure fund. So there's also questions about why and how we would use taxpayer money to prop up a project that couldn't stand on its own 2 feet, that will destroy our coral reef and our climate. And so there's lots of equity issues as well.
Hmm. Absolutely. And so one of the issues that's come up recently as well is the, I guess, financial structuring of Adani and the way in which it's unlikely that much of the revenue that would come from this mine would stay in Australia in the form of royalties.
That's right, absolutely. And we've found that the company, first of all, there are many of these companies, bit of a shell game as to where things sit and who manages what. Reputation for this company in India is tragically bad. They're basically known for violating every promise they make, whether it's environmental or human rights and worker protection, questions about money and tax. All those things are, I think, something we should think long and hard about, and why we would risk our own environment and our reef with a company like that. Here we've found, too, they have offshore accounts in the Cayman Islands, and you know, there's questions about whether, for instance, if we were to use taxpayer money to fund this mine, whether that money would go offshore. And, you know, this is money that could be spent on many other things that could be helpful for building, for instance, new jobs in the northern part of Queensland, in clean jobs, clean technology, startup ideas, you know, things that people could use but would stay here and be a benefit to everyone that lives in Australia. So I think it raises lots of questions about why are we so keen to give this money away? Why are we so keen to support a mine having signed the Paris Agreement and understanding that this kind of, you know, brand new gigantic coal mine simply can't be built?
Hmm. And so the mine has been approved. It's got state and federal approval. How close is this thing to actually getting built? Where is that up to?
It's a good question. The company is saying they're going to meet in May or June and have a final decision about moving forward, and that they would bring construction sort of online about 3 months after that. Having said that, they don't have financial closure, and one of the real challenges around this Australian funding and whether we would do that or not is the company seems to be using the idea of the NAIF funding to go around and give credibility to the project when, in fact, it still has not been passed. And every Australian I talk to seems possibly the most outraged about the idea of taxpayer money being used to bring this project off. So I think for Australians, it's one of the things we do have a say in. We have a say through our politicians about how money is used for things like this. And I think it's a real responsibility of all of us, if we think this is a crazy idea, to be heard quite loudly through our elected officials to say it's unacceptable, because I believe if we could stop the NAIF funding, this project would have a very hard time getting off the ground.
And that NAIF funding, that was never taken to an election as a platform or a policy, was it?
Not for this project, for sure. And, you know, it's often touted by the government as, you know, we're doing great things for Australians and jobs. And, you know, to think about, there's simply no transparency about how decisions are made for the NAIF money. There's no transparency about who the board is accountable or what criteria they're using to make choices about this funding. You know, if nothing else, you would think things like, is this money going to stay with Australia, in Australia, for the benefit of Australians, would be a, you know, an absolute bottom line. But it's not clear because it's quite a mysterious thing, and there's no accountability for what they do fund or what they, you know, what the criteria are. So I think it's, again, one of those things we all have a right to talk to our elected officials loudly and regularly about, because if we could stop it, I think it would make a real difference to stopping this mine.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite a lightning rod in terms of its scale and just the the vastness.
Yeah, it's $1 billion, and you think of what we could do with that for renewable energy. You know, certain regions up in Queensland are some of the most large take up of solar household-wise in the country. Those are jobs we should be moving toward and encouraging, and systems, you know, energy systems that can allow that to be popping up with support, with federal support, not 1950s polluting coal with a mine that, you know, technically could have an impact on our coral reef, not just from the transport, but from the climate impacts, which we're, you know, already seeing two extremely dangerous years of bleaching that show much of the reef may never recover.
And 350.org, of course, is not just fighting against new fossil fuel projects, but you're also very vocal in support of renewable energy.
Absolutely.
And Queensland is actually an ideal location for a lot of new wind and solar developments that would bring regional jobs, yeah?
Absolutely. And, you know, while we're not looking to that as our, you know, to turn to now when we know we first have to do it for our own commitments in the Paris, the UN Paris Agreement on climate, but also just for the future of where jobs will lie in Australia. So an investment in that, and, you know, we've heard the debate and battle over, you know, should we, if we, you know, the federal government saying too fast to renewables is dangerous for stability. Well, fixing that problem and allowing a system, electricity system around the country that will allow us to transition to the renewable energy we know we have to have is really critical. And again, that kind of money, $1 billion, could make a huge difference to allowing that to happen. So I think, you know, we have to hold our elected officials accountable. Currently, those that are in at the moment at the federal level have no plan for how we make that transition. Mm. And this impacts places like Queensland, where that money could be used to really send a strong signal that this is where the future is, and we're going to, you know, innovate, we're going to move to that, and we're going to be part of that global economy that relies on clean energy. So a lot to be asked of our elected officials, and in Queensland, the state government as well, who have authorized this mine and stand by it, which is, of course, the Labor government. So even though the Labor government has what I think is, at least from a, you know, starting point, an excellent transition plan and thinking about the move to renewables, we still have a state jumping up and down when it comes to coal and saying that's where we have to go.
And the Queensland government was elected on a platform of saving the reef. Doesn't approving and going around spruiking for Adani run totally counter to that sort
Absolutely.
Of election promise?
You know, there's 69,000 jobs in tourism along the reef that Queensland depends on. So to think about turning your back on that, even the company itself has said under oath that the mine itself would provide something around 1,400 jobs. So the trade-off is significant. And why would we choose dark ages technology over those jobs that are sustainable, that have been around and are, you know, a huge help to the Queensland economy and to Australia as it brings people in from around the world, it's a mind-boggling thing why the Queensland government would support it. To their credit, early on, they promised no state funding. Interestingly, that wouldn't have anything to do with the NAIF funding. So you have seen that Pelletier and the mayors of Queensland off on a junket to India to talk about how great this project is going to be. Again, it's our job to hold accountable our elected officials to say this is just unacceptable. So 350 and six organizations are doing a roadshow about the Adani project all around Australia starting next week. Melbourne will be on the 31st at the Convention Centre, so I'd love people to come along. We're going to be armed up with things that people can do, from easy to, you know, escalating, to ask everyone in Australia to get involved to stop this mine, because it's just too dangerous. We can't go there. It's time to leave that kind of giant climate bomb in the ground and move on, and we're all going to have to get active to make sure this doesn't happen.
Absolutely, and Bob Brown did make that Franklin Dam comparison, and recently we've had the Bentley blockade. What sort of tactics are kind of on the cards? Is there, if this thing does get financing, which is a very open-ended question because it's the economics of it are terrible, but if it does get financing, are there blockades planned, or is that something that's being kind of discussed and thought about?
I think people are pretty upset about this mine. Certainly there's, like, go around to talk to, and often a lot of older people with kids and grandkids who just can't see why we would go down this path, that it's such a threat to our environment and our future. I think people are ready to get activated. They're ready to start with anything, and we'll certainly, with other organizations, be looking to what those opportunities are, you know, certainly around the NAIF funding, around the company itself, who will have to be, you know, starting up here in Australia with working with Australian companies who will be contracted to do work. So we'll be looking at, you know, where are those opportunities to make it very clear that people don't want this mine to go ahead. And I think people are ready to, you know, do the kinds of things that were done in the Franklin, would travel and would take risk. And, you know, we'll certainly be hoping that people will get vocal, very active, and that we can stand our ground on this project. It just simply can't go ahead.
Yeah. All right. And what time, actually? You said the 31st of March.
That's right.
Is that a Friday?
Sadly, it's Friday. We'll see how people go hearing about a somewhat dark story of, you know, going down the coal route on a Friday night when I could be at the pub. But hopefully it's a good lineup of speakers. There's some music. There's a great MC who's a comedian. She'll be lovely to hear from. I think it starts at 7, 6:30, doors open. So, yeah, we'll be there bright and early that afternoon to talk to people and sign them up and hopefully give them lots of ideas and things to kick off with to get active. And it's 6 organizations involved, and we're looking forward to building this as a strong coalition of groups that, you know, whatever they bring in their diversity of who they are and how they work, to making this a very loud, a very diverse group of people who don't want to see this mine go ahead, and work together to, I think, you know, do all we can to stop it and make it such a thing that we simply can't get past it, that the power of those people taking action and being involved can really stand up and tell our elected officials, you can't go ahead with this or you won't have our support.
Hear. All right. Thanks very much, Blair, for speaking to us this morning.
My pleasure.
Yeah, keep up the good work.
And thank you so much. Yeah. Hopefully we'll see you at the roadshow.
Yeah, for sure.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All the best.
All right, Blair Polesi there, the CEO of 350.org, talking about the new Stop Adani Alliance. And as Blair mentioned, 6:30 doors open, 7 o'clock start on Friday the 31st of March. That's next Friday at the Melbourne Convention Centre. If you want to go along and learn more and get involved in the campaign to hobble that mine and make sure it does not go ahead.